You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey America, I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and more importantly, an avid lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org or as a podcast on iTunes. Today's show, I want to discuss something I find fascinating, really, and a real practical skill, especially to the outdoorsman or the survivalist, or just anybody who loves wild game, and that is classic meat preservation techniques. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not an expert on this subject matter. So you know what I did? I went out and I found an expert. He's a great friend of mine. He is the best, by far, the best chef I know. This guy has never handed me a piece of food that was less than perfect. And I'm talking about anything, a little piece of chicken, just salted right, cooked right, delicious. To the most extravagant dishes I've ever had. The guy's great. More importantly to me, he's a good friend. He's a great American, a patriot. And his name is Chef Chris Gesualdi. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chad.
Welcome aboard. I'm glad to have you today. You're going to be my voice of reason, my expert on this subject matter. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background in the industry or in general?
Well, first of all, that was a beautiful introduction.
Thank you.
It's a lot to live up to.
That's what I do. I'm professional.
I'm a CIA graduate. I've been in the city for the last 30 years. Was Thomas Keller's right-hand man before he had a right-hand man. And I spent about 10 years at...
All right, wait, I got to stop you right there. Okay, so how the mighty have fallen. This man right here was Thomas Keller's right-hand man, and now he's Chad Pagano's right-hand man. So I feel a little bad for him, so let's take it easy on him today. I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
It's okay. I was in the city about 30 years. I was at Montrachet for 10 years, fine restaurant in Tribeca. And now I'm a very happy chef at the Institute of Culinary Education.
I didn't mention he is a colleague of mine at the Institute, and again, just like everything he does, he is a really great chef instructor. He handles his class, manages his class beautifully, and they're lucky. The students are lucky to have him. Okay, so today I want to talk about food preservation. Food preservation has been an essential activity throughout history. The very cycle of the seasons create periods of shortage and abundance of different foods at different points of the year. This problem was only worsened with the development of agriculture as people sacrificed sacrificed their mobility and came to rely on fewer sources of food. And the cycle of the growing season. Their human effort. They had to figure out ways to maintain their food when they got their hands on it. So they killed a deer. There was no way to consume that deer, and it wasn't efficient to consume that deer within a couple of days. So obviously, they had to preserve this food for the future, and they were ingenious in the way they developed these ideas for food preservation, meat preservation. When we look at it, really what we're talking about here is damage caused to the food through chemical changes. And those chemical changes, could be oxidation, spoilage in general, and they're caused by living organisms, molds, bacteria, yeast. So these food preservation techniques depend upon, and this is the bottom line, depend upon killing or inhibiting the growth of these microorganisms. At the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. But, you know, we're not savages. We don't just want to kill the microorganisms and have a piece of leather to consume, and that's why Chris is here. He's a chef. This guy's a brilliant chef. And I want to discuss the classic techniques with you, Chris. And I don't really know where to start. I don't know if there's a logical place to start, but maybe, you know, you tell me. Is it curing? Where do we begin this discussion? What technique do you want to discuss first?
Probably the simplest way to do it would be to slice the venison very thin and simply just salt it, maybe add a little sugar if you like.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. All right, so we're talking about curing. Now, I'm a hunter, so I'm going to go out and shoot my deer. I'm going to gut my deer, and I'm going to bring it to you. What cut of meat are we using off this deer for this? Or it doesn't matter, or what's better? What do you prefer to create a beautiful cured piece of meat?
I mean, because you have the whole animal, you have the luxury of using whatever you want. Of course, the loin is the tenderest part. If you were going to go out and buy that, it'd be sort of a waste.
Okay.
So I would probably start with the leg, the top round of the leg.
All right. So someone listening at home who's not a hunter, they could purchase a leg of venison.
Yeah, and you would cut it the same way you would cut a scallopini.
Okay.
Lightly salted, a 2-to-1 ratio of salt to sugar. Or you could just simply brush it with soy sauce.
Okay, and then physically or scientifically, what's happening? So we're introducing this meat thinly sliced. So we need some knife skills here. I'm going to do a nice thin slice of the meat. We're using what, a pan, a bucket, a rock? What are we putting the meat on?
A tray, a bowl.
Okay. And then we're introducing, what's the ratio?
One part salt.
Two
parts salt, one part sugar.
Okay. And physically, what's happening now? So the meat's exposed to the salt and sugar.
You're just extracting the moisture.
Ah, there it is. Extraction of moisture. Really, we're cooking it. That's cooking, right?
It's not really cooked. It's going to have a cooked texture.
Yeah, but I thought cooking, hold on, was the removal of moisture from a product. I know you went to the CIA, and that's the Harvard of cooking. I didn't.
So I mean, I would have to say cooking would include a little bit of heat also.
Ah, see, I always forget about the heat. Okay, so we're curing. That's why we have a different word for it. Now I understand. Okay.
That's now, bone roaster's point of view.
Bone roaster's. Thank you. To give you a little background, I called my chef friends at the school bone roasters just to belittle them a little bit. We'll talk more about that later. But okay. So we got the salt. We got the sugar. We got these thin slices of venison. We're extracting moisture from the venison. What are we seeing physically? We're looking at this. Are we seeing bloody, disgusting sugar and salt?
Oh, you're going to start to see the meat sweat a little bit.
Okay.
It's going to lose its nice glossy color, a little more dull.
So now to be efficient in this, how am I doing? I'm layering this in the pan, the bowl, or am I doing each one individually? How would you do it?
I would...
Because I got a whole leg of venison.
I would line them all up.
Okay.
Season them with my cure mix, turn them all over, repeat, and then put them on a sheet tray with a salt pad or something, or...
Talk to the home people. You're a pro.
Parchment paper, wax paper.
Wax paper, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
And then put them in your oven about 140, 150.
Okay.
Until you get like a dry texture. I can't give an exact time. Overnight.
Right.
That's usually the time for everything.
Cook until done. Until you wake up, until your hangover feels better, right?
Until you remember you did it.
Okay. Now, wait a second. How long is it in the salt and the sugar?
10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Oh, that's it. Wow.
It's quick because it's thin.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you could answer this for me. Historically, how did the Native Americans accomplish this?
Sliced very thin and just dried it out in the sun.
So they sun-dried. Very interesting. Because I see you at our school, and Chef's a, like I said, he's a doctor, really. And I see him with his dehydrator and different things like that. So these are just shortcuts, really. I mean, if I put it in the sun...
I wouldn't really say doctor. I'd say more like scavenger.
Scavenger. Okay. So that's why we get along, actually. He's a scavenger. Okay, so curing. Pretty straightforward. Now, the one thing I'm worried about here, you're talking about salt and sugar, and that's all great. We've cured it. We've killed the microorganisms. We put it in the oven. Now we're ready to eat it. Do I have any flavor? Do we add anything? Is there a way to impart flavor through the curing process or the cooking process?
Salt and sugar would be the beginning. You can always add garlic powder, onion powder, ginger powder. You know, dried spices are great.
Okay. Any rhyme or reason to that, or you're going to give me the chef answer? You know, you got to just kind of do it. You feel it out. You kind of know how much to use. Fresh herbs, how about that?
You can use fresh herbs also.
That sounds good.
You can marinate in olive oil with fresh herbs first. But
before it goes in the oven.
But olive oil gets rancid, so you got to be careful.
Right, and we're talking about preservation of meats here, so we don't want to do that. All right, so that's good. Anything else to add on curing?
You're a big fan of like the ground up one, aren't you?
Oh yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up, because we were kind of pre-gaming before the show what we're going to discuss, and Chef Ed, really what we're talking about here, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, is jerky. We're making venison jerky.
Slim Jims,
right? Regular guys like us call them Slim Jims. So I said I have a friend of mine, my butcher actually, who butchers my wild game for me out east, and he does a beautiful jerky where he actually grinds the venison, spices it, flavors it up, and then extrudes it or pipes it out of a corking gun kind of onto trays, and then puts it in a dehydrator. And I told Chris how much I like this technique, and the meat seems a little more accessible. I can chew it a little easier, it breaks apart, you know, as opposed to trying to chew through a piece of leather. And Chris, you know, being a CIA graduate, you know, all turned his nose up at me. Explain why. What's your opinion on that, grinding it and extruding it first?
I mean, I agree with you 100% on the texture. It's a little more chewy than tough.
Right.
But I technically, and that's because I'm a CIA graduate, I wouldn't consider it jerky.
Oh, okay, here we go. See, now we got to start defining things by technique and everything. I respect that. All right, let's move on. We're moving quick here. We've only discussed curing, and then really... these early settlers, these Native Americans, anybody, they used a lot of different techniques. What other techniques would you find interesting? I was kind of researching this a little bit, and they were talking about, you know, the British corning or canning meat. How do you feel about talking about it? I thought that was a little
corning is more, it's another word for like pickling.
Pickling.
It's in a brine with lots of spices. There's probably some acid included also.
Okay, so we've heard of, you know, corned beef, obviously, right? We're drinking our Guinness and we're enjoying our corned beef. That's what they mean. It's a pickled meat at the end of the day. Would that translate into, to me, I've never tried it as far as with wild game, but it sounds like something that would translate really nicely. You know, the gaminess of the meat, we're talking about venison in this case, would translate nice with all that, with the idea of pickling.
And this way you're actually adding moisture. You're not taking out moisture.
Oh, okay. So, no, discuss the process a little bit with me.
So, again, I would go back to the top round of venison. I'm sure everybody's had pot roast before. Mom's pot roast.
Sure.
Dry as all hell.
It's America.
Put it in a brine for a day or so and then braise it.
All right, you're skipping over a lot of brine. I don't know what a brine is. Talk to me.
Brine is water, salt, sugar at the minimal.
Oh, so here we go again with the salt. Now, you said it's a wet technique. What do you call it? A moist technique?
Yeah, you're fully immersing or submerging the item.
See, but I thought salt extracts the moisture from the from the meat itself. How am I?
But there's also a lot of sugar in there too, which helps keep the salt inside the meat.
Which is interesting because we know sugar is a liquid. We buy it in a bag, right? And it's granulated, but we know in its natural form, sugar is a liquid, so it's a moisturizing agent, really.
Right, and it controls the fermentation.
All right. Why don't we take a short break here? We'll take a break, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Never in Love by Four Lincolns on heritageradionetwork.org. We met that night. I caught you in the light, shining down like a miracle. You look like Apollo, like someone I could follow into battle over my heart. There's hope between us. I just cannot believe this. Someone
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You could call it potted.
Hey, welcome back. Sorry about that. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. As you can see, I'm not a professional. I'm just learning all this right now. But I'm very excited because we have an expert with me in studio today, and his name is Chris Gesualdi, one of the most amazing chefs I know. And we're discussing classic meat preservation techniques. And we were just discussing before the break brining, and we were saying how the sugar provides moisture within this brining solution. So, okay, so I have my cut of meat. It's in the brining solution. How long do I keep it in there? How do I know when it's properly brined?
For something small like a loin of venison, you'd probably keep it in there like 2 hours.
All right, a loin of venison. And what are we talking about there? Maybe 2 pounds?
2 pounds, meat? 3 or 4 inches in diameter.
Okay.
Something big like the leg that's got a bone. You might even want to inject that.
Okay.
With like 10% of the weight with brine.
So instead of it sitting and absorbing this brining liquid, we're gonna kind of force the subject and force it into the meat through this injector.
Yeah, that way it gets brined all the way through and you won't see like any rotting, like if you're gonna like hang it.
Okay. To age, or what do we call that?
To age. To dry.
To dry. And then after it's brined, it's aged, we cook it.
You can just let it dry out like prosciutto if you want for like 3 or 4 months in your basement.
Okay, and that's obviously something that's got to be regulated, controlled, right? Humidity.
50 to 60 degrees and about 60% humidity. And your basement's perfect.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like the back corner of my basement.
October to like March, April.
Okay, and just based on the salt content and the brining solution, I'm not worried about, you know, bacteria attraction, and that's the whole point of it. You know, you brought up prosciutto. The Italians invented this technique or adopted this technique to preserve food, right?
The only problem you could run into is if you're in a moist area. It's not going to dry in a moist area. It's going to rot.
It's going to rot. So you got to control the humidity.
It's heartbreaking.
I'm sure it is. I know you've done a lot of this, Chef. You do a lot of this. I've seen it hanging in various boxes around the school and whatnot.
I used to bring them home.
Okay.
I'd be walking down Fifth Avenue with 7 salamis hanging from my neck. And
he's so Italian, isn't he? That's how you could tell an Italian walking down the block, when they have salamis hanging around. I'm Italian, so I could say that. Don't give me dirty looks, Jack. No one cares. I'm Italian. I'm allowed to. All right. Let's move on. You had mentioned duck confit. Can you talk to me about that? I love it because, you know, we go to the restaurant, we order duck. Well, guess what? I duck hunt. I go out and I sit in a blind for hours, freezing, calling the ducks in.
It doesn't have to only be duck. You can use the shank of the venison also.
Okay.
Usually it's done with tougher cuts.
So it's a technique to do what to tougher cuts? What am I accomplishing with this?
Again, it's cured in the salt, the sugar. You can put garlic and thyme and bay leaf and peppercorns and parsley stems. Maybe being a pastry chef, you might put some mint sprigs in there or something.
Okay.
Let it sit a couple days.
I don't know why it's got to get offensive to call me a pastry chef like that.
Let it sit a couple days, rinse it off, and then you're going to fully immerse it in fat and cook it till it's tender, falling off the bone. And you can keep that in your refrigerator for 6 months.
Okay. Let's back up a little bit. I like where your head's at. Fat. What do you mean? Let's assume I'm doing a venison leg, confit style, right? Am I speaking?
Could be olive oil.
Okay. Could be olive oil. That's nice.
Could be butter.
Butter.
Could be duck fat. Could be beef fat.
All right. So I have a big vat I'm imagining on my stovetop. I got this leg of lamb totally submerged in olive oil. Let's stick with the olive oil.
Simmer.
Okay.
Till it's tender. You can use the bone as a guide.
And so, you know, a typical deer leg, how long am I simmering?
2.5-3 hours.
Okay.
And make sure it's fully immersed. There's nothing outside the fat. The fat will congeal in the refrigerator.
Oh, so it's done. It's staying in this pot.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so it's done cooking. It's simmered out. I take the pot. I let the fat congeal around the meat. Put it in my refrigerator, and enjoy it
for the next 6 months.
Wow!
Just keep your hands out of it. You want to take some venison out? Grab it with a spoon or pack it in smaller batches.
Okay, so you could divide it up at that point, make it convenient for consumption, obviously.
Yeah, you can either make some friends with your cooking or lose some friends. It's up to you.
See, this is why he's here. I love that. That's the philosophy of Chris. It's awesome. Okay, now, so, you know, I was watching this movie the other day. The Native Americans were camped out, and they were... They were fishing, and they got a bunch of salmon, and they were smoking the sides of salmon. They were, what was going on there? Smoking. How does smoke preserve food? How does the smoke cook the food? How does that render a raw piece of salmon safe to consume?
First, the salmon is cured again with the salt and sugar.
Oh, okay. So before we even get to the smoking process, that's really not a preservation technique by itself.
No.
Okay, so I got to cure the... So we're back to the salt and sugar, the layers. And you're basically going to do the same thing with the fish? Just to discuss fish. It's a wild game.
I've seen people cure the fish anywhere from 8 hours to like 5 days.
Hmm.
I put about 3 tablespoons of the cure mix on each side of the salmon.
Okay.
And I do it 2 days.
Now, what's... all right, so 2 days. Now, if I go 4 days, what's the advantage, disadvantage? Does it matter?
It could get a little salty. It'll definitely get a little firmer.
Okay, so texture. If I want it a little firmer, leave it in a couple extra hours a day.
Right.
Firm the meat up.
Then you're going to just wash off all the salt and any herbs you put in there. And then you're going to cold smoke it. Cold smoke is 100 degrees down to like 40.
Okay, so you're talking about a piece of machinery here. Yeah. Explain that to me. So what do you use to smoke?
Well, I have a real smoker with a thermostat on it.
Okay. It's electric? It's
electric.
Okay, and how does the smoke generate?
You put chips in, you turn it on.
You got to see his face right now. I know he's smirking like I'm an idiot. Like you don't know how to smoke something. I have a little bit of knowledge about it, Chef. I apologize. But someone might be interested in getting into this. We got to kind of talk him through.
I like to use like apple chips or
yeah, but all right,
peach.
Okay, so, all right, apple chips. I've heard of this. Apple, you could use different kinds of woods. Is the flavor really... because I got to be honest with you, right? We could be honest here. I don't taste the difference between apple and this one and the other wood. This was smoked with this. I get the smokiness. I can taste that. But I can't determine. It really must be a sophisticated palate that could ascertain the difference between a maple-smoked salmon and a... applewood smoked salmon, because I can't. Can you?
I mean,
be honest.
There's a definite difference between apple and like pecan or mesquite.
Okay. And you prefer apple or you don't really? It depends on the situation or your mood.
I like apple.
You like apple. Okay. Now, how come... All right. So you got this fancy piece of machinery you're using, right? You plug it in. You put your chips in there. You set your thermostat. You know, give me a guideline here. How much meat am I smoking, and for how long does it take? You know, what?
We're talking about salmon right now, right?
No, let's get off the salmon. What can we smoke something else? What
you
else?
Can smoke venison.
All right, venison. I love venison.
You can make like a little play on Canadian bacon. Use the loin of venison.
Mm. Okay.
Cure it or brine it.
All right, now let's back up. So I know the loin. Well, venison in general, and we're talking about deer venison, right? Which I want to talk about, too. Your definition of venison was very interesting, right? But we'll get back to that. All right, so we're talking about a venison loin, deer venison loin, and it's fat-free. I mean, there's very little fat in the loin of a deer. So how are we making bacon out of that? So using that as a term, am I going to recognize it as bacon without any of that fat?
But Canadian bacon and our bacon are two Canadian completely bacon. Different things.
Thank you. That's a good point.
I mean, a loin is a loin, no matter where it comes from.
Okay. All right, so we got the loin, and we're going to make bacon, Canadian. I'm an American, but whatever, he wants to make Canadian bacon, that's fine. I have no problem with the Canadians. Go ahead.
Brine it or cure it.
Okay.
And then we're going to lightly smoke it.
Now, how long is that going to take? We're doing the whole loin here.
Yeah. We do it at about 180 degrees and cook it to an internal temperature of 150.
Okay. So you're just checking. You have an instant read thermometer. You're checking.
Don't be afraid to use the thermometer.
And how long is that going to take, give or take?
Probably like hour and a half.
Oh, wow. That's quick. See, I've always had this vision of these techniques, you know, taking forever. I don't know. You know, you watch some of these shows, I don't know, on TLC or some of these other crazy channels. They have these, you know, the Alaskan wilderness where you see these guys fishing, catching salmon. They're doing it in, like, they're smoking in a tent, I guess. You know, a more primitive way of doing it, but they're accomplishing the same thing. Just, you know.
Just got to control the heat.
That's great. Okay, so we're covering a lot here. We're moving really fast. Oh, so I was mentioning, you know, I was talking with Chef yesterday, Chef Chris Gesualdi, by the way. Brilliant man. Great American. And I said, you know, let's talk about venison. And he said, okay. And he got all CIA smart on me again and said, what kind of venison? And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Venison is venison. The deer, right? He said, no, all wild game. Correct me if I'm wrong. All wild game is referred to.
That's correct.
Now, does it have to have four legs, hooves? Where's the cutoff here? Because I you're not going to call a duck, a wild turkey, venison, right?
It said venison originally described meat of any game animal killed by hunting and was applied to any animal from the families of deer, hare, wild pigs, goats.
All right.
Moose.
There you go. See, I love that because, you know, as this show progresses, guys, we've been talking a lot about venison. The first show, venison. Second show, how deer die. All these things we've been talking about rotate around the deer. We're going to move on. We're gonna start talking about ducks, duck hunting, the eastern turkey, wild elk, bow hunting elk in Montana. We're going to talk about moose hunting up north. So we're gonna be branching out into all sorts of wild game at the end of the day. One more thing, we're running out of time here, Chris. What would you like to add to this whole discussion? What do people need to know overall about the preservation of meat? Why is it important? Why is this technique? Why do you feel strongly about this technique in general? Tell me something.
It's a way of utilizing the whole animal. Okay. And using it at a later time. It can also add texture and dimension to all of your dishes.
There it is. I love that. Use of the whole animal, more importantly than anything for me. That's what this show is about. That's what I'm about as a hunter, as a conservationist. Okay? I'm about preserving the animal, using the animal to the best of our ability. You know, I'm not sharpening the bones and making spears, but if I could use every cut of meat off that animal within reason and utilize some of these techniques, you know what? I'm a better member of our society for having done that as a hunter. I could feel better about going out and harvesting these animals and utilizing them and sharing them with loved ones and friends like Chris. Chris, you were great, man. Thanks for being with us today, and I'm hoping Jack likes you, and we'll make you a co-host. I'm ready to promote you right now, but apparently there's big shots at this station. We got to clear all this stuff through.
If he doesn't like me, we'll take him out in the woods. We'll cure him a little bit.
All right. Well, so that was good run, Chris. Nice having you, and we'll see what Jack says now. That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank Jack for producing and engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on the heritageradionetwork.org or iTunes as a podcast. Also, you can check out our new site at wildgamedomain.com. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.